The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Second Canto, Chapter Number 5, Text Number 37. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari. Recorded on September 13th, 2013, in Timișoara, Romania.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Purushasya Mukham Brahma Kshatram etasya bahava urvo vaishya bhagavata padbhyam shudra vyajayata purushasya mukhaṁ brahma Shatametasya bahava
Shatametasya bahava
Urvor vaisho bhagavata
Urvor vaisho bhagavata
Padhyang shudro vyajayata
Padhyang shudro vyajayata
Purushasya mukhaṁ brahma
Purushasya mukhaṁ brahma
Shatametasya bahava
Shatametasya bahava
Urvor vaisho bhagavata
Urvor vaisho bhagavata
Padhyang shudro vyajayata Purushasya
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead
Mukham
Mouth
Brahma
Brahma
Is the Brahmanas.
Kshatram,
the royal order.
Etasya,
of him.
Bahava,
the arms. Urvo, the thighs. Vaishya, are the mercantile men. Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead. Padhyam, from his legs,
Shudra,
the laborer class,
Yajayata,
became manifested. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Brahmanas represent his mouth, the Kshatriyas, his arms. The Vaishyas, his thighs, and the Shudras are born of his legs. Purport. All living beings are stated to be the parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. And how they are so is explained in this verse. The four divisions of human society, namely the intelligent class, the Brahmanas, the administrative class, the Kshatriyas, the mercantile class, the Vaishyas, and the laborer class, the Shudras, are all in different parts of the body of the Lord. As such, no one is different from the Lord. The mouth of the body and the legs of the body are non-different constitutionally. But the mouth, or the head of the body, is qualitatively more important than the legs. At the same time, the mouth, the legs, the arms, and the thighs are all component parts of the body. These limbs of the body of the Lord are meant to serve the complete whole. The mouth is meant for speaking and eating. The arms are meant for the protection of the body. The legs are meant for carrying the body, and the waist of the body is meant for maintaining the body. The intelligent class in society, therefore, must speak on behalf of the body as well as accept foodstuff in order to satisfy the hunger of the body. The hunger of the body is to accept the fruits of the hunger of the Lord is to accept the fruits of sacrifice. The brahmanas of the intelligent class must be very expert in performing such sacrifices, and the subordinate classes must join in such sacrifices. To speak for the Supreme Lord means to glorify the Lord by means of propagating the knowledge of the Lord as it is, broadcasting the factual nature of the Lord and the factual position of all other parts of the whole body. The brahmanas, therefore, are required to know the Vedas are the ultimate source of knowledge. Veda means knowledge and anta means the end of it. According to Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is the source of everything, aham sarvasya prabhava, and thus the end of all knowledge, Vedanta, is to know the Lord, to know our relationship with Him, and to act according to that relationship only. The parts of the body are related to the body. Similarly, the living being must know his relationship with the Lord. The human life is especially meant for this purpose, namely to know the factual relationship of every living being with the Supreme Lord. Without knowing this relationship, the human life is spoiled. The intelligent class of men, the brahmanas, are therefore especially responsible for broadcasting this knowledge of our relationship with the Lord and leading the general mass of people to the right path. The administrative class is meant for protecting the living beings so that they can serve this purpose. The mercantile class is meant for producing food grains and distributing them to the complete human society, so that the whole population is given a chance to live comfortably and discharge the duties of human life. The mercantile class is also required to give protection to the cows in order to get sufficient milk and milk products, which can alone give the proper health and intelligence to maintain a civilization perfectly meant for knowledge of the ultimate truth. And the laborer class, who are neither intelligent nor powerful, can help the physical services to the other higher classes and thus be benefited by their cooperation. Therefore, the universe is a complete unit in relationship with the Lord, and without this relationship with the Lord, the whole human society is disturbed and is without any peace and prosperity. This is confirmed in the Vedas. Brahmanasya mukham masid baha rajanya kritaha. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunetan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Virijana Sahidam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pashacha Desha Tarine. Prabhupada is defining here what is actual Vedanta. Veda means knowledge and anta means conclusion. So the final conclusion of all knowledge is called Vedanta. So what is that knowledge conclusion? Three things. to know the Lord, to know our relationship with Him, and to act according to that relationship only. The word only is very significant. If you know who is the Lord, you know what is your relationship with Him, and you act in that relationship, you're not doing enough. That word only is a very important word. Say, well, you know, I do so much service for Krishna. I know He's the Lord. I know I'm His servant. I do so much service. No, that's not enough. Only is a very significant word here. It means only I engage in Krishna's service. I don't do anything else except Krishna's service. If I act according to that relationship, but it's not only, that is called karma mishra bhakti, or it is mixed with fruitive activities. And one will make progress in that way, but you have to progress to the point where you're doing that only. It doesn't mean you have to live in an ashram. You can be like Arjuna, a married man engaged in an occupational duty. Arjuna was not living in the ashram, but he acted only for Krishna. He had no other business except to act for Krishna. So this word only is very, very significant. In Prabhupada's purports, you can just pick one word and derive unlimited volumes of meaning, even from one word. The significance of only, you see. Very, very significant. Another significant point is that simply to know something, your knowledge is, if that's only you know it, but you don't act on it, your knowledge is incomplete. You may know something, but if you don't act on it, you haven't realized. And such knowledge without activity, without actual application. Prabhupada wrote me in one letter, it becomes dry and useless. As I've explained previously, there was one boy, he came to our center in Austin. A boy, very nice, fired up boy, from a Hindu boy from Sri Lanka. And he bought a set of Bhagavatams, and he just loved the Bhagavatam. He was reading. We said, why don't you chant also? Because the purport of the Bhagavatam is to chant Hare Krishna. You see, why don't you chant also? He said, oh, no, I just want to read the Bhagavatam. Well, about halfway through, he lost his steam because he wasn't applying the knowledge by chanting Hare Krishna. The knowledge lost its, and just like Prabhupada said, it becomes dry and useless. The knowledge became dry for him, you see. He was getting some material titillation from some, you know, exotic new philosophy. But if you don't chant, then it becomes old, becomes worn out, it becomes dry and useless. It's like people buy a new car and then they get tired of it. They get rid of it, get another car, you see. Or nowadays it's so degraded, you get another wife, you see. Very degraded society. So one has to actually apply this process. If you apply the knowledge becomes ever increasingly sweet. You see, everything about Krishna is ever fresh. Krishna is called Navayovanam. Yovanam means a youth, and Nava means new. Now in this material world, you say, oh, I got a new car. You come back a year later, can he say he has a new car? No, it's an old car, you see. But in Krishna Bhakti, in the spiritual world, I can have a new car, and then 10 million later, it's still a new car. In other words, Krishna's name is fresh and new. This knowledge is fresh and new, and it becomes fresher and newer the longer that I go on chanting it and reading it and following it. In other words, the first day you begin Krishna consciousness is exciting. If it becomes boring after that, means you're not properly connecting with Krishna. You're on the Rajaguna platform, you see. But if you're actually connecting with Krishna, then it becomes even more exciting than when you first joined. You see what I'm saying? Becomes even more nectarian, even more enlivening, more uplifting, more thrilling, more adventurous, more, ever increasing. That is Navayovanam, you see. So we, each of us, can take a close look at our own hearts, see how dirty we actually are, you see. Then we're not feeling that thrill, that excitement at every moment. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. We can see how dirty we are, actually. Very, very dirty, very contaminated position we're in, you see. And we can take some remedial measures. Well, I don't want to see the dirt. It's too discouraging. Don't say like that. There's four stages of competence. Perhaps you've heard. There's four stages of competence. The first stage is called unconscious incompetence. You see, I'm a complete basket case, a complete idiot, but I think I'm great. Yeah, I'm really great. That's called unconscious incompetence. Now then you come in contact with an advanced devotee, you see, and they point out, you got this fault, that fault, this fault. You go, oh, I don't want to hear this. Don't tell me about this. It's not, you know, my false ego can't stand it. Don't tell me I got this fault, that fault. No, don't tell me that. You see, then you remain unconsciously incompetent. But if when you meet a senior devotee, you see, who points out this discrepancy, that discrepancy, and you take it in. All right, let me learn something here today about my faults. Let me learn about my faults. Then you can graduate to the next level, which is called conscious incompetence. Now I realize what an idiot I actually am. I'm a complete buffoon, an idiot. You know, now I'm like scum. Scum of the earth, they say in Sanskrit, Naradham, you see. I'm really, really low-class scum character, you see. Now you're making advancement. You realize that you're scum. Very good, you see. It's very good. You realize how dirty, how contaminated, what a just a rascal I am. I mean, you say, well, how my spiritual master can call me a rascal? How this devotee can call me a rascal? That's not fair. But wait a minute. What did Lord Chaitanya's guru call Lord Chaitanya? He said, you are a rascal. Nimai, or whatever his name he used. You are a rascal. You're not even qualified to study the scriptures. You just better chant Hare Krishna. You see? So what is our position compared to Lord Chaitanya? And he was called a rascal by his spiritual master. So if a senior Vaishnava or my spiritual master calls me a rascal, I should think, Yes. I'm rascal. I'm very much rascal, you see. So now you're consciously incompetent. You've made progress. And from there, you can go to conscious competence. You become a fixed up sadhaka, fixed up in sadhana. And of course, in the higher, the ultimate stage is called unconscious competence. That's when you get to raga bhakti. Not even conscious of following any rules. And of course, that's far beyond our present position. Raga bhakti. Unconscious competence. We're automatically doing pure bhakti without even thinking about rules and regulations. You're just spontaneously serving Krishna in your original svarupa. That's conscious, unconscious competence. So we have to become fixed in this practice of Krishna consciousness. Take advantage of the wonderful teachings of Prabhupada. Take advantage of those persons who were trained by Prabhupada. Take advantage of those who are advanced in this Krishna consciousness. Learn from them. Serve them with love. In this way, we can get out of our fallen position where we think we're the center of the universe. And actually come to the position of pure bhakti. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
I don't faith.
Faith?
Yes, because yesterday you mentioned that you were given a mantra and that you tried it and it did not work. And you gave it up. And although I asked about what do we do if we don't feel the taste for chanting the Maha Mantra, your advice was to keep on chanting because...
Who can help me understand what she's saying? I'm partially deaf.
She's saying that how to develop the faith. Yesterday you mentioned about that mantra
that
you got it from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and then you didn't feel you got any results, so you gave it up. And then the question was that when you're chanting the Maha Mantra, you don't feel any taste.
What if you don't get anything also from chanting Hare Krishna?
Yes.
Then what to do? Yeah.
Then you said, go on chanting.
So what if you're chanting Hare Krishna and you feel like you're going down the runway and not taking off? How long do you keep going down the runway? That's yesterday I was giving the example of how I got a mantra from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, aing, aing, aing. And I was chanting that and I never felt any elevation, but I chanted Hare Krishna and I felt the elevation. So the question is, what if you chant Hare Krishna and you don't feel any elevation? Then what is your position then? How do you develop faith in the name if you don't feel some results in the beginning? Well, you can see those who are getting the results, that's one thing. You can see the amazing results that others are getting by chanting Hare Krishna. And that will give you faith. It's like we saw Prabhupada. Here's someone who is completely absorbed in Krishna Nam, you see. And he's the most amazing person you could ever experience in your whole life. I mean, a person who wasn't even living in the material world. He was living with Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. At the same time, he was manifesting a body here in this material world to deliver us from our nations. It was, to actually see Prabhupada, I mean, that would give you immediately faith, you see. So now, it is up to those who have great faith in Prabhupada, they have to act in such a way that and be such ideal examples that others will get faith by seeing them. Actually, my surrendering to Prabhupada was not... It was inspired by the disciples of Prabhupada. Because I could see the disciples, they were experiencing something that I was not experiencing. Prabhupada prema. They had love for Prabhupada. They were tasting some nectar by giving their lives to Srila Prabhupada. Here I was, an independent, you know, self-realization seeker doing my own thing. You see? You know, foolishly thinking I was pretty cool, you know. And not really getting anywhere spiritually, just remaining stuck on the mental platform, you see. But I could see these devotees, they were in a higher plane of consciousness. They had this wonderful loving reciprocation with Prabhupada that I was not privy to. And I realized the only way that I could also taste that sweet, loving relationship they were having with Prabhupada was to give my life to Prabhupada. So that gave me the faith to see what the devotees were experiencing by giving their life to Prabhupada. So you just really, you have to associate with advanced devotees. That's the key. You need senior association, those who are very, very absorbed in serving Guru and Krishna and tasting great happiness in doing that. And when you see them, you see the amazing lifestyle, the amazing consciousness, the amazing feelings, the amazing knowledge, the amazing expression of knowledge, the amazing ability they have to in all times, places, and circumstances to remain Krishna conscious. That will give you faith. Yes.
Yesterday also you mentioned that the mantra has to be received through the disciplic succession.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. So if we are receiving Hare Krishna Maha Mantra from the disciplic succession, then if we are not getting any taste, wouldn't it be that I'm doing something wrong?
Yes. If I'm chanting Hare Krishna, and I've gotten the mantra from the bona fide Sampradaya, from Prabhupada and his followers, you see, the bona fide Sampradaya, and I'm still not getting the taste, that means I'm doing something wrong. I'm committing offenses against the name, namaparads. So therefore one should study the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name and see, what am I doing wrong? How am I violating these offenses? Because you clear out the offenses. See, offenses make fences that block you from the name. So if you clear out the offenses, then you clear out the offenses. And the name is, it's just a wide open field. You just become drowned in the ocean of the name. So see how you're committing offenses. If you're not getting taste, see how you're committing offenses. And clear out all the offenses, and the name will become so sweet, so poignant, so profound, so effervescent. It'll become so resonant that you'll just be jubilantly relishing the name 24 hours a day. Anything else? You want to add some points to answer that, Dave? You want to add something more?
That's what I added.
Huh?
That's what I said.
Yeah, okay. Kren Gupta.
I want to ask, what is the meaning of the expression to take shelter of Krishna?
Repeat that from again.
What is the expression?
What is the meaning of the expression to take shelter of Krishna?
Take shelter of what?
Krishna.
To take shelter of Krishna means, just like in this material world, we get some apartment or some house, and we feel a certain shelter there. We feel at home there. Now here's my shelter. I get all my necessities here. I'm comfortable here. It's our home, you see. So you have to understand, you have, just like we had that graphic experience in Austin. Mataji and I were at a wonderful, blissful festival, the Baltic Festival. And then we were flying back. We had an overnight stop in London. In the middle of the night, I get a phone call. The temple, our house is the temple. And it's a temple center. Our ashram, the ashram temple that we've been living in for many years, and was our shelter in this material world, it had burned. It was struck by lightning and it caught on fire and it was very badly damaged. So all of our whole idea of shelter, you know, was completely shattered. Any idea of shelter in this material world. So it really helped me to realize that really have no shelter but Krishna. There's no place we can really get our necessities taken care of. There's no place we can really call home except for Krishna. Shelter means where you're protected. It's like if it rains, you take shelter of an umbrella. Or if it's cold, you take shelter of a warm apartment. Shelter means a place where you're protected. If some demons are attacking you, you know, some demon is running after you, you go in your house and you lock the door, you see, and you call the police. You take shelter of your house negative elements. It's a place you're protected from negative elements. That's shelter. So Krishna protects from all negative elements. Everything. If you simply take shelter of Krishna, then all protection is there from any negative element. You're protected from everything. See, our so-called shelter in this material world, our house, our apartment, can it protect you from old age, disease, and death? No. But Krishna can protect. So Krishna is the only real shelter, the only real home we have is Krishna. Want to add something, Jim? Okay. Another question, Narad Muni. Okay.
I want to ask about the duties here.
Duty?
Duties for kshatriyas, brahmanas.
Yes, yes, okay.
But what is the position who make his duty, but is not so personally surrendered to the spiritual master?
Is someone...
Acts according to their varna ashram means kshatriya, or they do perform their duties, but they are not surrendered to spiritual master.
But varna ashram means ashram also. Varna ashram means varna and ashram combined. Ashram means spiritual progress. So the Vedic civilization, varna ashram, means you're not only situated in varna, but you're also situated in ashram. Either as a brahmachari, grahastha, vranapasi, or sannyasi, while you're doing your varna. The Vedic system is not the varna system, it's the varna ashram system. You stand on two legs, not one leg. So the Vedic system stands, social system stands on two legs, varna and ashram. So you do your varna and you do your ashram also. Both things. Varna is for bodily maintenance and ashram is for spiritual advancement. You have to do both things. If you do varna without ashram, you're just a dog. You see? You're just like a dog or a pig or a monkey. So you have to do varna and ashram. Then you're properly situated. Does that answer your question?
Yes. In this connection, I want to ask about someone can help to the local projects, some person.
Well, if some, then that means they're doing ashram, knowingly or unknowingly, they're engaged in ashram. If someone is doing service to help, just like you have some agricultural activities, some cow protection activities. If you engage someone according to their varna nature, and they don't really even have any spiritual Krishna consciousness, they're just doing the work, because that's knowingly or unknowingly they're doing devotional service. Unless you're paying them, but if they're doing it as a voluntary service to help you, because they have this. They like to work with cows, or they like to work... Sometimes people would like to get out of the city and go out and work in the country and do some... They feel uplifted because it's like sattvic thing for them. So you engage people, even if they don't know it's for really for Krishna, because it is for Krishna, they're doing bhakti. Is that the answer? Yeah. So engage the whole world. Prabhupada said we could actually make big farm communities, because the society will gradually deteriorate more and more. The economic situation will gradually deteriorate more and more. And we see in the United States, I mean, I remember, you know, like back in the 70s, you never saw beggars anywhere. But now you see beggars everywhere, all over the U.S. Just like during the Great Depression. You see beggars, you know, on the street. Every major intersection, there's a beggar there. Some derelict-looking beggar begging for money, you see. So the society is gradually deteriorating. Material society is gradually deteriorating more and more. And if we have farm communities where people can come, even there just to survive, they can come there and do farming work, you know, plowing the fields and just engaged in agricultural activities just to cover their own maintenance. Prabhupada had that vision, the farming communities, that we could, the people who are suffering in the material world could come and have a comfortable, happy, peaceful lifestyle in the rural setting, and, you know, hear kirtan, prasadam, and they can gradually become devotees. That was part of Prabhupada's vision of our farming communities. Let them come and work, do service to Krishna, and live happily, working the land, taking care of the cows. Does that answer your question? Okay, Narad Muni.
Thank you for the class.
What's our time limit today? We start a little late, but what's our time limit today, Prabhu?
8:30.
8:30?
Okay. Чухме в тялото има различни има хора с различни качества, отговарящи на брамана, шатри и така нататък. Как да се научим да уважаваме всички членове на ИСКОН като части на тялото, независимо от техните качества?
In this verse it is said that there are different parts of the body of the Lord, and we know also that ISKCON is the body of Śrīla Prabhupāda. So there are devotees with different qualities, and how to learn to respect all the devotees regardless of their service and position.
How to learn to respect. Yes. My vision of ISKCON is like a big, big diamond. With every ISKCON devotee is a different facet on that diamond, you see. It's one big, beautiful, beautiful diamond. And so one should learn to appreciate every single facet. We could write a big poem called the ISKCON poem, you see. And there could be a verse for every devotee in the whole ISKCON, describing their wonderful glories, each and every ISKCON devotee. You see? So, actually, one time in Mayapur, I started writing a little essay about the name of many, many different God brothers and writing all their different glories. But actually, you could write a big, big poem, you know. Every ISKCON devotee would be a verse in that poem, describing the glories of this devotee, that devotee, the wonderful, wonderful transcendental glories of each and every devotee. That's my vision of ISKCON. Every devotee, there's so many different varieties of devotees. Some are quiet, some are loud, some are introverted, some are extroverted. We get so many varieties of devotees, but they're all wonderful. Every single devotee of ISKCON is simply wonderful. So we have to just appreciate, just like if you had a feast, you see. It was a big Janmashtami feast, right? Or something like that. And you went there and it was just rice, and it was only rice. What is it? Only one prep? Feast means many preps, you see. So ISKCON is like a big feast. And every devotee is another prep. I get to relish this devotee, relish that devotee, this devotee. Every devotee I can relish. Some devotees are the bitter melon. Some devotees are the gulab jamun, some devotees are the ice cream, some devotees are the pakoras, some devotees are the chutney, you know. Every devotee is a different type of flavor and a different taste. And they're all wonderful. And together they make the most wonderful, glorious feast. That's my vision of ISKCON. So that's why we love all the devotees. Even if some of the devotees are like bitter melon, it's all right. Bitter melon is very purifying. Ton devotees are like bitter. But that's purifying, you see. That's purifying. The bitter melon is very purifying. That bitter melon, Karela, you know, very, very purifying. And it's very nice when you combine with other things, it becomes very tasty. So when you take bitterness along with sweetness and all these different flavors, you mix it together, it becomes the most incredible love feast. You see, it's the ISKCON love feast. Okay? Like to add something? Okay, anything else? Yeah. How to understand we're developing in Krishna consciousness.
If we are growing in Krishna consciousness.
And how to understand that we are advancing.
Yes. And if we are doing
some service...
How to understand what is the quality of our consciousness?
If you are doing a service, you have to understand what is the quality of your consciousness.
Yes, how can you measure your own advancement in Krishna consciousness? Is that simply? Yes, the more you're becoming detached from material sense gratification. Just like take a brahmachari for example. In the material world, a man sees a woman as an object of his enjoyment. You see, but if he sees women as mothers and not as objects of his enjoyment, that means he's advancing in Krishna consciousness. He doesn't see a woman and think, how can I enjoy this woman? Or vice versa, a woman seeing men, instead of thinking how she can enjoy them in this way, how to see every man is like my son. Prabhupada said the men see the women as mother, and the men see women as mother, and the women see men as son. So in this, if we can, in this way, we become detached from the idea of sex pleasure, sex enjoyment, you see, which is the binding knot of this material world. It's called Hridaya Granthi, the hard knot in the heart, sex desire, you see. If we're no longer seeing the opposite sex as something for my enjoyment, but seeing them as for being engaged in Krishna's service, then I'm advancing in Krishna consciousness. So we have to develop this kind of transcendental vision. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshvaram. See that Krishna is the owner of everything. Therefore, everything is for his pleasure. Nothing is for my enjoyment. I'm simply servant. So the more that you are free from the tendency or the desire or the impulses within your heart to enjoy sense gratification. That's how you can see your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Viraktir, it's called in Sanskrit. Viraktir. To give up the taste for material sense gratification. Next question. Yeah.
The man has a vision that all the women are his mother. How about if an old man and a very young girl?
Even then, yeah. He doesn't. Even then, every woman except for one's wife, even a small, even a young woman, an old man sees a young woman, still, my mother. I respect her like my mother. In other words, you would not, any gentleman would not think of having sex with his mother, you see. So in this way he has to see. Sometimes old men, they become attracted to a young woman and they get married. The young woman thinks, well, he's rich, old guy. And they go for it. He'll be dying soon, I'll inherit all of his money. And he takes advantage, oh, I get to enjoy a young woman in my final days, you see. But no, she's my mother. Even for an old man and a young woman, beautiful young woman, she's my mother.
Wouldn't it be easier to consider her a daughter? Wouldn't it be easier?
No, not daughter. Of course, the spiritual master sees his... For guru, that's another thing. He sees his female disciples as daughters. But in the general system is everyone is mother, not daughter. Actually, daughter can be a dangerous thing. Vedas say you should not be alone. Even with your own daughter, you should not be alone. That's Vedic injunction. And sometimes it happens. A father has illicit sex with his own daughter. It happens sometimes. So even daughter is dangerous. Mother is the safe.
And having that vision, how does a brahmachari become grihastha then? If all women are
He will never. If he has that vision solidly, he will never become grihastha. If he is weak in that vision, he may get married. But if he's solid, he will never get married. How can I marry my mother? He's fixed brahmachari. Next question. Your hand went slightly first, 1 millisecond before his hand. Okay, good.
I want to ask about
it's like a, some devotees are like a bitter lemon, bitter melon. I want to ask if some devotee making something wrong in watch, is it wrong to share with some younger devotees about something wrong quality of such a devotee?
Can you help me understand that? Then?
Yes, the question is, we see, like, we have a position from some senior Vaishnava, senior devotee. We see some devotee making something wrong.
Uh-huh.
It's wrong. We to share with younger devotees about this wrong thing. You
know? Yes. When you're trying to correct
the
younger devotee, or you just share it?
To share, not.
Okay. So he says that when someone is in a senior position and they see something wrong, the younger devotee is doing something wrong. So to share.
No, not this much.
Care?
We see some devotee making something wrong.
Yes.
And there is new devotees. They don't understand what is wrong, what is right.
Yes.
This is good way to say that this is wrong. This is not right to other new devotees.
You have to do that. Is it good to correct them?
He's saying that if you see somebody doing wrong, then to share that mistake what the other devotee has done to another new devotees, so would that be all right?
Yes.
Is it all right to tell them it's wrong?
No.
No?
Not to tell that person directly, but to share the
share?
Share it that this person has done something wrong.
It's better you tell him directly. Someone's doing something wrong, the senior devotee should directly tell the younger devotee. The younger devotee should be trained how to take instructions from senior Vaishnavas. And if he's doing something wrong, he should be directly. And why say something behind the back to someone else? Directly say it. Let him be trained immediately. Why you say, well, so-and-so is doing something wrong over there. It's going all around the circle. Everybody knows except for him he's doing something wrong. They didn't tell him directly, oh, Bhakti Joe, I mean, you're supposed to chant with your right hand, not your left hand. I see, you know, and you tell him directly. That I don't know if it meant touching your question or not. Am I getting close to answering your question as you asked it? Okay. Of course, you have to instruct in such a way. You have to teach. You don't want to break them and have them run away. You see? You have to people aren't going to hear from you unless they unless they know that you're really their well-wishing friend. You have to have a relationship. The most important thing is to have a good relationship. That people trust you, they want to learn from you. And then when you have that good relationship, you can tell them anything is necessary. But if there's no good relationship, they don't trust you, then what you can say? You're not in a position to really tell them anything because it won't have any impact. Of course, if there's a big festival going on, then so for the sake of getting the service done, you may have to correct someone. Even if there's not much of a relationship with them, for the sake of, you know, putting on a Rath Yatra, it's not that you have to make a relationship with every person you're engaging before you can tell them, no, the festival has to go on. You just say whatever is necessary to get the festival to go on. But as far as day-to-day relationships, working together on an ongoing relationship with people, you need to develop a relationship. It doesn't mean you have to be buddy-buddy necessarily, but they have to respect you and see you as a senior person who cares about them, who has knowledge, who has realization. So they'll be eager to be trained by you and be corrected by you also. Does that help? Okay. Anything more you'd like to add to that division? Okay. Anything, any other questions? We got about 2 minutes left. And then we're going to call it quits for this session. Yes. Oh, actually, he had risen his hand earlier. All right, he deferred to you, because you had been earlier on there.
I wanted to ask, how can we develop trust in Krishna and not in the material?
What in Krishna?
Trust.
Trust, okay. And not in?
In the material energy.
Like in the material?
Energy.
Energy, okay. How to trust in Krishna, how to develop trust in Krishna and not in the material energy? Okay. Well, the first thing is you have to understand, you really have to, if you want to go deep into this, you have to first of all understand that there, this thing, this reality that we're living in right now doesn't come out of nothing. It's the first thing you have to understand. Nothing comes out of nothing. Everything comes out of something. So there has to be an original cause for existence. Existence didn't manifest out of nothing. So there is an original cause. So you have to understand that origin, that source of all existence. Just like a gold, you get gold out of a gold mine. The gold mine must therefore possess gold. You can't get gold out of a goldless gold mine. So we see so many persons have come out of this, or manifested out of this existence in which we're living. So therefore the original origin, the original source of existence must possess personality and therefore must indeed be a person. An impersonal thing cannot possess personality. Anything which possesses personality is therefore a person. Therefore, there is a person who is the source of everything. And this is just by logic, philosophy, philosophical logic, you realize there's a person who is the source of everything. And then now how to trust that person, that's the next question. Is he cruel or is he loving? That's the question. Is he a cruel tyrant? Is he, you know, a sadistic, cruel tyrant who loves to torture people and laughs at people screaming in agony? Or is he a kind, loving God? So how would you determine the difference? How can I trust he's a kind, loving God, you see? And not a, you know, a some fiendish, wicked person who's out to screw me at every step, exploit me and torture me at every step. How do you trust that he's actually a loving, kind person? You see? Actually, I remember one songwriter who, I hadn't gone very high on level of realization, but he said, I opened my heart to the whole universe and I found that it was loving. So he had only come to the impersonal level, but which is kind of how a non-person can be loving, it doesn't make sense. He was approaching the personality of Godhead. But we hear about Krishna from great devotees like Prabhupada. We open our hearts to Krishna. We put faith that there's this loving, kind person named Krishna. We put our faith in the words of great realized souls like Srila Prabhupada. And what happens is we experience something. We actually taste some rasa or sweetness or relationship. We have to take a leap of faith that there is a person named Krishna who is the source of everything. And we act as if he were indeed there by bowing down to him, chanting his name, offering our food to him, etc. We have faith. We act as if he's real. Okay? And by doing that, we actually get the most amazing reciprocation, which confirms that he is real. You understand? So in the beginning, you have to act. You make an experiment. And by following this process, you take the sadhana bhakti process, it's an experiment. And by doing that, you get reciprocation. And the more that reciprocation comes, the more the trust comes. Of course, we trusted Prabhupada, you see. Because of the love, the wonderful loving dealings that he had with us. We've never seen such a loving person in our whole lives. So just by seeing Prabhupada, associating with Prabhupada, we trusted him, you see. And because he trusted Krishna, therefore we also trusted Krishna. So Krishna is far away, you see, but Prabhupada is close. Prabhupada is right there in front of you. And now we have the followers of Prabhupada. They are right there in front of us. And we have faith in them. By the loving dealings we have with them. And because they have faith in Krishna, therefore, because we trust them, and they trust Krishna, therefore we trust Krishna. In this way. I'd like to add something.
Yeah, I was thinking it's so simple that what we are getting from material nature, we love material nature, we put so much trust in material nature. Just by experiment we can understand that material nature, we are not getting any pleasure out of it. Even if we get pleasure, it's immediate miserable conditions comes in. But if we trust Krishna and take shelter of him, even the miserable situation happens just like it happened. A very crucial example is of our ashram. Lightning hit when we were not even there, and it's not a place even for. But we have taken shelter of Krishna, so that there was another place immediately for us to take shelter. It was all provided, and there was no miserable condition for to go through. So that's how one can develop trust in Krishna.
Yeah, Krishna took really good care of us. It was amazing. Immediately, the place was already there. Before we even landed, there was already a place for us to go. We got off the airplane. I just had a look at the burned out ashram, and then we went on to our new residence, temporary residence. Immediately, it was already there. So. Huh?
In the material thing, little thing, even if we overate, we get a pain. If Leia loved the gulab jamuns and we ate the gulab jamuns, a lot of it, then we become sick immediately. So what is there in the material nature?
Material nature gives you a wonderful, wonderful reward for a whole lifetime of dedicated service. Now, get sick, get old, and die, rascal. So how much trust you can give? And if you went to work for some company, and they have a policy called the pink slip policy. Any time you get all kinds of great perks, but when they give you the pink slip, and they take you out back by the dumpster, and they shoot you. And it happens at random, you never know. Well, so-and-so got his pink slip today. We heard the gunshot out, then we saw his body was in the dumpster. You know, that's the material nature. You're working for a company that will take you out in the back and shoot you and throw you in the dumpster at any minute. You want to work for such a company? That's what you're doing. That's what we're doing by serving this material nature. Giving our heart and soul to this material nature. We're working for a company. Huh?
Should you develop the trust in a person who is giving you everything without you asking him? What should you develop the trust in?
In God we trust. There's a slogan in the U.S. They have one joke. They said, in God we trust, everybody else has to pay cash. But the fact is that we have complete faith in God, because He's the only one that we can really trust. Everybody else is out to exploit us in different ways. Everyone is selfish and greedy in this world. Everybody thinks they're the center of the universe. We can't really trust anybody here. Only Krishna can be trusted. One godbrother of mine, he said, Prabhupada, you're the only person. I don't trust any of my godbrothers. I only trust you. Prabhupada said, don't trust me also. I can let you down. Only trust Krishna. You see, that's why we trust Prabhupada. He's so perfect in humility. That's why we trust Prabhupada also, because he's perfect in humility. Perfect in humility. So our time is going way over time. And I'm going to lose. Murari Krishna may lose trust in me if I keep going over time like this. It is a special occasion, but we can't take advantage any further than we've done now. Because we have everybody has to go to work, it's a work day, and etc.
We have another program in the evening.
6:00. Next program is at
6:00 in the
6:00. Everyone come back. Bring your friends, bring your neighbors, bring your prime minister. 6:00 tonight. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shankar Shankar ki jai. Shri Radha Damodar ki jai.